just open up there naturally and get into it.
Cool.
Let's do it to it.
Let's do it to it. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light.
Ooh. One more week until that man will be in Milo.
Yes, yes.
By the time this plays, by the time you can listen to this, yep. It'll be like 5 days.
By the time I insert it.
Yeah, by the time it is inserted, it will be 5 or 6 days until Jake Hill is in Milo. Anybody who's in the area, you can get your tickets at BissellBrothers.com.
You can. There might even be a spontaneous rap.
Rap battle.
There might even be some spontaneous oyster rap.
Yep.
Shellfish bars.
I think he's serving clout fish. Specifically for the entirety of the day. Shucked clout fish. You can get them by the half dozen or the dozen. However you
clout
like
on the half shell.
Yep, clout on the half shell. How you been, brother?
Pretty good, man. Yeah, pretty good. I always say that. Like, yeah, pretty good, .. Don't have anything I'm hiding. But yeah, pretty good. I think that's all we can ask for.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
As a man who's always... generally thinks I'm doing pretty good. I'm the last week into the next week. I got like a couple more weeks before summer really dies down, and I am
classic. You already counting the time until it's over.
I need to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh yeah.
But I'm hanging on by a thread a little bit. But happy and healthy, and all the big things are.
I've heard you've been breaking some records this summer,
and
though.
In order, and that has been good. Yeah, we have. You forget I had One of the mailbags that came in before was like Three Rivers Kitchen update related. Been incredible. So glad we did it and have done it. Response has been great. But you do the adding that kitchen adds so much to what you need to do in the daily flow.
Yeah.
Other than just pouring beer. And it's been the first summer bit of getting used to that.
What if we did all the food liquefied? Then you're just pouring food as well.
Now we're talking about innovation that excites, my friend. Again, it's the same thing. We had the exact conversation during COVID of like when we had to switch to restaurant seated flow, host, seat, server. Yeah. It gave you an appreciation for the way the setup was before where everybody comes to you at bar service. It's kind of similar, the exact same thing now that you've got to clear bus buckets and food brings an element. When you're in control of the food, there's an element of responsibility and messiness and cleanliness that immediately jumps to the forefront that gives you the hindsight contrast view of like, ooh, it was nice when all you had to pick up was glasses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's been great, but it has been hectic. And I was looking at like year over year numbers and stuff, and you forget that I think the conception of it's like Memorial Day to Labor Day is what's always simply in my mind, but it's really like Memorial Day, then it settles, rises. You have like a big July 4th.
Yeah, we better do something with those other 9 months.
Yeah.
As a business.
Yeah, but even within that, from the numbers I look, there is a 4 week stretch of like mid July to mid August.
Yeah.
That is always the boom of it all. And everybody I talk to in other like restaurant and stuff like that is very busy in this window as well. Yep. And then mid-August hits. Ours will go 1 week later because of the Spose and Jake Hill concert. But you can see it in the numbers that once like back to school starts looming, like and it kind of really starts to fall down mid-August as people get their eyes on getting back out of summer life.
Yeah.
Returning to where they came from, getting kids ready for school.
And that's why Green Day said, wake me up when September ends.
Exactly.
Am I right?
So that's where I'm at, brother. I am eyes on third week of August. It's been a great summer, our biggest summer ever, and on we go.
Cool, man. For a guy that always obsesses over monetary milestones with the business, healthy ones, I'm not saying... you're often, mom is the word over here about now that you've reached the plateau. Yeah, whatever, we're fucking doing great. Yeah, moving on.
Yeah.
For a guy that'll text me at night with like, oh, if we just sell like 8 more burgers tomorrow, it'll be the record.
It's so funny. I do it here somewhat. I did it all the time at the dog, but you'd get to like the end of the night, you'd pull up the square and you'd be at like... whatever it would be, like 59.91 or something like that, and be like,
better order a $9
I'm
meal.
I'm buying my shift drink tonight, baby. I'm buying my shift drink. And text Noah, hey, we hit six tonight. Legit, I've done that a million times. Who knows?
Good
play
stuff.
Play it how you got to play it, I guess.
Yeah, whatever works, whatever keeps that brain happy.
But it is part of that summer flow in Maine. We've been super busy. We talked about it a little bit on the last one. Asked for a little help in setting up guests. Need to get into a bigger guest setup and kind of get it laid out for a while again. That's why you're listening to the two of us again. So anybody who has guest recs, we got some good ones. Reaching out to them now. Got a couple of Texas ones like we asked for.
If anyone wants to be our assistant for free, like that would also be a solution.
An
unpaid, very unpaid internship. A lesson in chaos, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah, is maybe what we could bill it as.
Yeah.
Shout out to interns everywhere.
And Matt Nelson as well.
Yes.
Just one thing before, I think a good thing to talk about today. I've had something going on in my family that I've never shared like a ton of on here, and would have kind of another four solo, and frankly, where that thing...
Stop going so hard on the...
That,
now
thing,
that I'm stuck
God
with you.
Damn it, man.
We're busy, and this
another
is still...
We'll goddamn yeah. solo.
really but, selling it early on.
Where we're in the trajectory of where that personal thing is, I think is a good time to open up and talk about it. It's something I'd like to do, and selfishly, I think would be good for me. But it kind of speaks to... We've kind of flirted with it adjacently on this podcast where there's a lot of threads of kind of self-help. And as you talk to people, these things come up. But to kind of focus some of the talk today on mental health in general, how we deal with it, how we've dealt with it, and with this kind of bigger thing going on with my family. But before we get into that, one thing that I, as a self-proclaimed macro man, as you like, who likes to say that all the time, I had no really idea, or CO2 wasn't on my radar whatsoever. And then in a couple articles, it was kind of noted as the reason for some of the brewery closures or pullbacks that we talked about last episode. And then seems like it has become the biggest story in beer. I'm seeing articles everywhere about the inability to get or the price of CO2. And I wanted to ask you if that's something that has touched our brewery, if that's something you're dealing with, and kind of what your opinion or experience with that has been.
Knock on wood, we're not dealing with anything of right now. It seems fine. It was more for us, which was why I was a little surprised to sort of see it come back, but not that surprised because we'll be dealing with these sort of flare-ups in supply for who knows how long, but in different places. Question, what the fuck CO2? How do you make it? I don't know. I knew once, but it's like the same thing. Like, how the fuck do you make a can? Like, the normal person does not. The supply chain is so vast for some of this stuff and so complicated that it's... can't be really surprising anymore when these things, like someone says you can't order this all of a sudden. But anyway, yeah, it was like meat of COVID was when we started having to have our deliveries throttled a little bit.
Yeah.
Almost as a precaution from our supplier. So like started purging tanks with purge tanks with nitrogen. I think we added... With our bright tanks, we do a pressurized cleaning, so you don't have to repurge the whole tank. We do that like 3 times, and then we'll break the whole thing down, a caustic clean.
And those were all new practices as of this CO2 flare-up, or is that what you were doing anyways?
We added some turns to that.
Gotcha.
So let's say, I can't remember exactly, but let's say we were doing 3, we started doing 5 during that period. Just we're more aware of it than anything. Like, there's no reason to just kind of set and forget a purge sort of thing. Like, so as of right now, I can't say that I'm not feeling it much right now, but
gotcha.
I know that each, like in any given state, you might have 3 or 4 different gas suppliers.
That's what
that
I was going to ask.
Contracted
next is,
with. So yeah. I don't necessarily even think that it shines a great light on ours in particular. We're really not excessive about it because it's like with any, for first and foremost, from an environmental, like if you don't need to be using more of this gas, that isn't helpful to anything but carbonating beer.
Yeah.
Basically, don't.
Yeah.
We really looked into, and we still might go this way, but it was just too, it was just going to be too expensive of a
recapture.
Yeah. At CBC in, I think, 2018, we saw a presentation on this company based in Austin. And yeah, I really looked into all that, but it would be, because it all needs to be self-contained, mm-hmm. it would be a really big expense. The filtration thing was expensive, but when you talk about getting basically hard piping to every blow-off bucket, instead of just being a plastic bucket, that needs to be like a contained drum.
That when that blow off happens, that's where it gets recaptured, and then you reuse that.
That gets in sent
carbonation,
to a filtration thing, and then gets sent to a bulk tank, just like we have now. And I would say someday we'll probably still do that, but it was just a new enough practice where for a brewery at our size at that time, it was not going to really make sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we are with it, mm-hmm. I guess. I have no real judgment on the stuff I've been seeing because you just don't know the whole story either way.
Totally.
Whether that is the whole story or whether, you know.
Yeah.
It's one of many things and it's the easiest thing to point to.
Totally. And in all that, I do want to give a big shout out to Seth Morton from Jackie O's, who, what a visionary first mover on CO2 recapture. From his story of that's how he got into Jackie O's, was pitching that as his thesis idea and getting into the brewery.
Many
years ago. Yeah,
I can't even, did they do it or is it just a thesis?
If it's too expensive now, it was well, real expensive.
That was kind of what I was thinking.
About 11 years ago.
I think it'd be.
But I always thought that was, I forget if he said it on our pod or if it was listening to the other pods and getting ready for his interview.
Gotcha.
But definitely, some bit of a fact that was when he was trying to do his thesis on, introduce that to the, like, in the brewery, and that started the relationship that
he really likes playing. You're it when he's playing tag. He's really trying to reel him in.
Oh yeah. But incredible. Curious. Yeah. Like I said, didn't see it at all and then saw it everywhere and hadn't heard much.
What have you been seeing? Night Shift, obviously, but
just again, I'm in news and all of that, I'm in a weird space, but you see these big, like, highlighty articles of, like, your favorite brewery is not going to be here anymore because CO2 is unable to get. And if you can get it, it's expensive. Just kind of over and over again, how expensive it
just
is.
Just like
and that
every other part about running a brewery.
But yeah, very much, even, I don't know, I don't remember the aluminum thing that I felt like was very big and widespread at the beginning.
So, if you were cultured, you'd call it aluminium, but whatever.
But it, like that, I didn't even feel like I saw as much in beer news or as I did from talking to the brewers and knowing people were going through it. And then this was kind of like the reverse of that. Like, I haven't heard personally of many people going through it in a very big way, but you're seeing it all. Everywhere in the articles was surprising for me. That's
why I bet any CO2 recapturing company is pumped about
flooding the market. That's who's writing all of these.
And in seriousness though, in a decade, I think that will be standard practice in breweries.
100%.
You make the fucking shit.
Yeah,
and you're buying the same thing to just use.
It's insanity.
But it's because it's logistically challenging
100%.
To get it back. So. But I think in a decade, I think that's a pretty fair assessment where, like, that will be the norm, not the exception by any means.
I couldn't agree more.
After having thought about it for a few minutes.
No. Well, ever since Seth. I mean, he's been talked to Seth years ago. I've been thinking about it ever since.
I think
since.
He even said in his thesis by 2030
that
this will be standard practice.
Well, I mean, he was trying to get it going again. I think he said by 2023. You know what I mean? Here we are. It's around.
Yeah.
Standard practice. I don't know.
But, yeah.
All jokes aside, I certainly agree with you.
And I've seen, like, some people say with good intentions, but like, why can't you just use nitrogen? And there's many, many reasons. A, if you've ever had a nitrogenated beer, totally different experience. Not inherently better or worse, but totally
but
different.
Better. Yeah.
And the other thing is nitrogen is so unsoluble compared to CO2. Like, people don't have tanks that can do that. Like, you have to very specialized tanks. How we nitrogenate beers, it's like a little drop, a liquid nitrogen drops into the beer to give it a like a nitro pop, but it's not soup to nuts nitro. You need to have tanks that are built for like 60 psi, which most normal stainless tanks are rated for like 15 or 20. So it just, it's not feasible. There's a reason CO2 is the gas that continues to be used. Cause like, I've read about people like carbing with argon and like, there's like, I think it's just the noble gases, I believe, could all, I don't know. I won't say, yeah. I believe there's some other gases and they're all in a specific area on the periodic
I
table.
I believe argon is the answer.
But they all work to a much lesser degree in a similar way nitrogen does. So there's a reason. Helium you could use also, I believe. There's a big, pretty big downside to helium that we all know about. Don't. Insert Alvin in the Chipmunks video. But anyway, that's gas, baby. I don't have it.
I'm proud of my self-control for not doing a last batch was better in a high-pitched voice. And on we go. Well, moving on to into the next space. We've talked about it a tiny bit on here, not a ton. I think in some regards, open isn't the word, but I'm much more off the cuff and kind of less reserved and very quick to talk about a ton of things. But you've certainly talked somewhat about some of your own struggles with mental health. And as a friend, you've certainly talked to me about it at times. And a few years ago, there was certainly a time where you were open with me about you were struggling with depression. You were going to talk to somebody for it. You were taking medicine for it and really kind of facing it head on. From that time till now, kind of how are you feeling in a general state these days? Is that something you still struggle with? Is that something you feel like you've, at least for the time being, put to bed and handled and worked on? Or how would you sum up your mental health at the moment? Start there.
Man, it's manageable. I mean, if anytime you're taking a medication, you're not really putting anything to bed,
certainly,
per se.
Are you still taking it?
Yeah. Killer. Yeah. And I don't see any reason not to. Some of the side effects you hear about with like antidepressants. I'm can't remember the salt name for it, but it's Lexapro. You might know it from the Kanye West song
made famous by
FML.
Do you know, is that an SSRI? Do you know?
Yeah. Because I started with Wellbutrin, which was not, and it was just kind of weaker and worked a little, but was kind of still would kind of get those bouts of like fucking crying on the floor and just being like, what the fuck is going on? It would highly recommend, by the way, to anyone.
So that you can use SSRIs and you can use humor to treat your depression.
I've been trying hard with the humor.
That's how most people do it.
Yes. For the side effects part, like, I definitely feel like there is a, you know, you hear a lot about like a dulling, and I felt kind of some of that, but nothing crazy. I think if I was on a higher dose, it would be more of a thing.
Yeah, it's, I don't want to interrupt you, but what a word to use. We're going to talk about my brother who has schizophrenia and kind of isn't in an amazing place with his illness right now. And that's what kind of is giving me the comfortability to talk about it, because it's not in the depths of hell right now, we're in a good place. But there is certainly a massive dullness to him that has, with his much stronger antipsychotics as a medicine, bring on a lot of dullness. But even beyond that, and the reason that I wanted to jump in is we've talked about my story, legit suicide attempts, very serious depression, kind of bipolar up and down and anxiety. And there is a, from the way I used to behave to the way I am now without medicine at the current moment, really haven't had for a very long time, but almost as the things I've kind of worked on for myself, I think dullness is even a good word to describe something that is workable and helpful. I think a lot of people would look at me right now and be like, I don't know if dull is the adjective I would use for you, but truly compared to...
If you're talking about gas, that's what I'd use.
In an emotional state from where I was before of these incredible highs, incredible lows, I think dullness by nature as an adjective is shaving off... You're trying to shave off the two far ends of that line, right? And that is something...
The poles.
Exactly. That is something that I feel that I've done a lot of work on for myself over time. I'm still working on, absolutely. This isn't like...
You're trying to flex that you don't even take medicine, dude?
Not at all. But the dullness, I think, is a great... I've tried to eliminate those two polar extremes as much as possible, and I have honed that in. I have a long way to go. I'm certainly still excitable, but I'm in a constant... A constant flow of being aware of that and still trying to chip away at those sides of getting so excitable, getting too low, and just kind of keep working my way to the middle. But there is a weird, the thing that I fight against sometimes now still is like, almost like, man, was I fucking alive at that time. It's
no,
a weird thing.
Yeah,
and it's just a very weird thing. I almost in some ways feel that I was the most alive when I was quite ill. And
yep,
there's still higher highs and lower lows, like, are the things you want to stay away from, but it's hard to deny how good higher highs can feel. And I think that comes into this stuff a lot where, like, bipolar disorder and manic depressives kind of, it's hard to convince somebody that you to get a, not to be in a manic state. And then that's a very bad thing because that can feel pretty good when you've got.
Well, I'm not trying to make it silly, but to actually in a real way talk about Kanye West, I mean, that's almost like the most cartoonish example of like brilliance from serious mental, a really bad mental place. But
100%.
Those like you can literally, as the, more and more music comes, you can literally like peer the bipolarness in the some of the songs and not by like, but just... A state of uncenteredness, kind of. Yeah. But, you know, say what you will about him now, in 50 years, he will be like the penultimate rapper of this generation, you know? And I think, you know, I'm early to that party, but but I don't know. I just think that's an easy, it's kind of joked about a lot, but.
But instead, you have this class of musicians that all died at 26.
It was 27, man.
Whose mental health was so, whose mental health struggles was so prominent that it took their life at a young age, whether that be from the vices that they used or by their own hands or any of those things. But and we still look on them now as some of the most brilliant musicians that have ever touched instruments and expressed themselves. So I think that speaks to that.
Yeah.
In an incredible fashion.
And just sort of one other thing to frame it, I think as a contrast, if anything else, I know like a lot of what I went through, going through, whatever, was just in created by just the increased pressure of my life, which again, when you're talking like, I'm not being like, I know what you felt, Kurt Cobain.
No,
like,
no.
But like, it gave me perspective of like, wow, if I'm like really withering, if I'm starting to like erode and letting this like shitty part come out more because there's not the barriers kind of for it from the pressure of like having 30 people work for you or whatever it is. I can't imagine if you are the hyper famous person in any way. Like it just it's I'm surprised it wasn't 25. You know, that's what I'm saying.
Being in that space, is there, can you think of kind of tangible things, even in the short window, like major lessons you've learned from that or tools you now have in your toolbox of like, if you start to be thinking in a certain pattern of a way, or if you start to like let yourself fall into a certain place, are there major lessons you've learned or things or like tactics you've developed to stay out of that place?
I think the biggest lesson that most people don't take that struggle with like a more common degree of depression, mm-hmm. which is no real less debilitating than, you know, what it can. I remember seeing this fucking meme way back and kind of scoffing at it, but it was something about like, this is what it feels like to get out of bed every morning when you're depressed. And it was like a piano was on the, and I was way younger and just kind of scoffed at it. Also, cause like, I ain't out there showing depression memes.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's not really my style. but I remember this other time then, kind of before I had done anything about it, I'm supposed to mow the lawn, mm-hmm. basic shit.
Yeah.
And I am just sobbing on my floor. Like, mm-hmm. I can't fucking get my act together to mow the goddamn lawn. Mm-hmm. It seems like so much. And I just, that kind of, that's my version of that meme of just remembering like, no, that's like, it is, it can be real. But I think the biggest thing that I would say, like, if you're doing that, it ain't going to go away. It will go away for a little bit, but it will come back. Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing, and this was absolutely all thanks to Forrest, who we talked about a lot last week.
Yep.
He dealt with like, kind of, I think, somewhat similar age to your brother, mm-hmm. was of the onset, sort of like late college, of sort of these strange things happening.
That, 21, yeah. 22, 23 tends to be.
Yep. And you know, I'm certainly not going to talk about that for him. But,
sure.
He's very open about it and was critical for me to do something about it, because he basically told me that. I was like, you need to do something about it. Like, it's not going to, you're just going to be living like this.
Yeah.
And his help really, because even when you are in that state, the idea of like fucking calling a therapist or mm-hmm. calling your, it seems also like an insurmountable amount of things that you need to do, you
yeah.
know? So I think the biggest thing is like, if you're feeling that way, accept that it's, you're going to still feel this way if you don't do something to try to course correct this.
Yeah.
So for me, that was, I mean, I have a million problems, like anyone. I'm not being like, yeah, I'm great now.
No, of course.
But that got all the problems that everyone's gonna have to it, got me to a place where I can handle those problems
mm-hmm.
in a normal way.
Yeah.
Where shit still sucks sometimes, shit still makes you sad, but like, you get through it.
Yeah.
And I was at a point where it's very like, even things that shouldn't bring you down that much, you know how it is. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I can say is like, do something about it, because nothing's going to change
yeah.
on your own, in my opinion.
And I think to take that, and very much in agreement with that, and to take that one step further, I think in hindsight for me, and again, speaking same way as you, as some, not as a master of any of these things, but as someone who feels that they've identified what they need to be putting their energy into working on very hard, is that I think there's a very tight correlation between procrastination and depression and anxiety for me.
I wonder why.
as those things don't get accomplished,
of course,
they create the pressure with which you speak of. They create the bad feeling.
I'm a fucking loser.
In and
how did I not do this?
That and so what I have found is fighting with my other natural tendencies, not treating them as depression or anxiety, but more treating them as like habits and tendency, and fighting with those has been very helpful to my mental health. Because, and the other side of that is that the things that you say in your head and the things that you think and tell yourself carry an immense amount of weight and power. And that's why
Especially when you tend to not talk to other people about it. Mm. That's the only voice you're hearing.
Yeah. And that's why when you have these responsibilities that have stacked up and didn't get checked off the list, I think everybody's natural thing is to kind of get down on yourself about it. Those words become real and manifest and around it goes. And that's where I've gotten back into it recently, but went a long period without it. But we've talked about it with my story, where I truly believe the thing that saved my life was this like wild repetition of affirmation of like wicked corny shit, because it was changing the words that were being said all the time from "you fucking loser, why are you doing this?" to literally forcing the corny as simple, "I'm Matt Robinson and I love myself. I'm Matt Robinson and I love you." Say that 50,000 times over 365 days and it's pretty hard not to love yourself, and on it goes. But I think for me, if you follow that thread all the way, it starts a lot with procrastination and not meeting the responsibilities you set for yourself, or not keeping the promises that you make to yourself.
And a lot of times that's not it, like, I think both of you and I do have a tendency to do this, is we don't set realistic asks mm-hmm. in the first place. So mm-hmm. it only gives birth to more procrastination and more being behind. When you're like, today, I know me, I'm going to do all this fucking shit in perfectly timed increments. And it's just maybe in a decade to get to that point. But I think I've been a much happier person by setting more the digestible like to-do list for myself.
Mm.
When I think before it was just, I was never ever in front of the ball, because it was like,
because the list wasn't real.
Every week the list just compounded deeper. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And I think that kind of ties to that thing people say, goal setting and all that stuff, of like small attainable wins, especially if you're in maybe not the place that we're in right now, but somebody listening who's in like
living the lap of luxury in this podcast chair.
Just in the throes of depression.
Yeah.
And where you say crying on the floor, can't mow the lawn. Maybe as stupid as it sounds, lawn mowing in that state, in that set, is too big of a goal.
But my goal is get off the floor, you fucking
get
idiot.
Get the small attainable goals that get your brain to release the dopamine and to give you the win, and don't judge yourself for how small those things are. If it's putting socks on today, baby, start there. But all joke, like truly, whatever it is, get the W's.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I know I kind of geeked
turn
out.
Turn the game back onto easy mode.
Well, that's where I freaked the fuck out about what Cam said, and went on that fucking capitulation rampage. But it was, I would do this thing with, it's exactly what you're saying. If I'm going to run 9 miles today, you get to the end of the day, that the to-do list went long, that 9 miles ain't happening, I'd just pretend I never said it and I'd take the L and just not do anything. Sit down, stretch for 20 minutes, do 50 push-ups, do get the small W and don't take the loss. I think they're very much tied together.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen that's been, that mind frame has done an incredible amount of good for Cam, and it's visible. You know what I mean?
But sort of why you had brought this up, and I think it would be really helpful to, for your perspective on a more intense, mm-hmm. a much more intense version,
totally.
of a much more intense evolution of the same sort of things that we're talking about.
Yeah, I do. I want to open up on my brother. I want to put a tiny pin in the thing we just said. Because there's one thing that
circle back on it.
I didn't think about it until this week. And I can give a real concrete example, but I, when I talk about not having depression and beating these things and some of this, and or feeling in a good place with them right now, what I very much do have from a mental health perspective that still affects me every single day is ADHD. And that's something that I can talk all this mess about, these things I try to do, but I'm not going to a doctor. I've been trying. They're kind of hard to set up, but I'm not going to a doctor taking ADHD medicine. And that's a goal I've set for myself in a 6-month window to change. But I think there's a ton of people who do have it and might be listening and this and that. And I just had this major realization this week to the thing that you said that I'd never thought about before. I'm very aware of the lack of focus. I'm becoming more aware as I get older about how important focus is to things and fighting against that. Distractibility, all of those things that come with ADHD, I realize. What I've never realized that I suffer from immensely is that as hard as it is to get into a task with ADHD, it's very hard to get out of a task once you've crossed that kind of 30-minute, once you've done the more than 30 minutes to actually be in it and to start getting the, like, actually start making headway at the task because you're in there. I can't peel myself out of that task to save my life. And then that's why my to-do list gets fucked and this and that, because maybe it's not something I should be prioritizing, but it's been on here for a week or two. I haven't done it. Now I'm in it. Now I'm doing it. Today is not the day that it should be getting done. There's other things that are more important today. But now that I'm here, I can't get the fuck out of it. A good example, we had got this shed that's been dirty for 2 years. We stack stuff in here. You would ask me to clean it up, to get some stuff in there. I haven't done it forever. I get into doing it the other day. I had even set a window for myself of when I was going to do this for an hour and a half. And this time I spent almost 5 hours, 4.5 hours that day doing that shed. I could not get out of the task once I got into it. That's a, I think something that doesn't get talked about with ADHD, something that I'm just realizing now that I'm going to focus on immensely, because that's where my lack of problems with the to-do list come from.
Yeah.
And that's where my inability to set an accurate one comes from too. Thinking I'm going to do this thing in this amount of time. Well, it takes me 20 minutes before I'm actually even doing it in any real way. And then I'm unable to switch out of it and get to the next thing on the to-do list, because I can't pull away from it.
Yeah. I'll tell just a random but kind of funny story of the extreme, I think, of that, or a manifestation of that. So I was prescribed Adderall for a while. It's been a while since I've been off it. It's just the pros did not, it was clear, like, we're not outweighing the cons, especially in the long game of things, for kind of that reason, because it almost puts you in this framework of, like, these little windows of everything, that you only exist in this TV box for whatever moment you're focusing on, and then you get out of that. But it's very hard to long game shit on in that realm. But this was before that. So that was kind of like the precursor to being like, actually, I think this is a depression thing.
Yeah.
But this was in college. Tried it for the first time recreationally, like a lot of people do in college.
Adderall
for studying.
Specifically, yep.
Had like this physics test, and it's the first time ever. So I'm supposed to be doing this all nighter for this physics test, which I'm horrible at.
Because you procrastinated?
Yeah, of course.
Let's go, baby.
And this was also my hemp phase. So dude, I'm supposed to be studying for this test. 6 hours go by, the sun comes up, because I can't get this certain knot to, like, lock in on this bracelet. I get so fucking fixated on this thing I'm not even, it's like a thing I'm wearing. It's not, it's like, whatever.
And there's no order that you need to fill by the morning.
Oh
time.
My God, dude. And I just, that was so vivid in my brain of, like, holy fuck. The test is in an hour, and I thought I took these studying steroids.
Yeah.
But without the proper self-control, the studying was just studying
this
fucking
knot.
The nature of knots. And it was just like such a bad feeling of like, what the fuck?
And that's,
man,
what I mean. That's where the whole thing comes through, because then that feeling is just gasoline.
Just alone in my bed sweating as my roommate. Yeah. Is also just, it was just shitty.
That
dude.
Feeling and this fuel for bad mental health. You know what I mean?
Totally.
That, for the self talk.
It's crazy, I'm depressed.
Bad mental health. Fucking sick at tying knots, though. You should see this guy.
No, I didn't even get sick.
But I just wanted to touch on that. Is that something I've been thinking about a ton lately? And I'm sure other people do as well. But to get to the thing that you asked and I haven't talked about a ton, and has kind of taught me a lot through it. My brother has schizophrenia. Just like you said with Forrest, I remember a time clear as day back when I was in my music phase. I'd had like a good run of doing a lot of music, was out and about and around and performing a lot. And like a few months had gone by without seeing my brother. And I mean, it was like from seeing him and then going and doing the stuff and having him come over a couple months later, he walked out of my apartment that night, and I turned to my girlfriend at the time and was like, who the fuck was that? And what happened to my brother? It was that much of a switch, clear as day. A person I didn't recognize, saying things I didn't understand. And that was the beginning of what's been a long road with kind of understanding what schizophrenia is. And in a really weird way, having the person on planet Earth who most resembles me and most shares the things that I'm made of and the things that I have, suffering from a vicious, vicious mental illness. You know what I mean?
I think everyone knows the word schizophrenia, but I think there is, for definition's sake.
Sure.
And I don't mean even like the Webster one, but like how you define it in terms of what you've seen.
And to be really clear, what my brother was diagnosed with back during this time, and it took a long time to get to diagnosis, and there's all sorts of story there. I don't know how important it is, but I think for my mother specifically, it was hard to like come to terms with how much something was going on that was very wrong.
I think you hear about that a ton. Exactly, that's parents, my kids, you know, using quotes, but my kid's crazy.
Yeah,
you know, and I obviously that's not the way we should be thinking about it, but that's certainly probably as a parent the instinct you get. Like, you're telling me my kid's crazy,
and
no way.
Incredibly hard thing to digest, and not to just, the reason I'm talking about it is where we're at in the world right now. And I think you with like school shooting type stuff and things like that, it's an incredibly hard thing to digest. It's an incredibly hard thing to do to the thing that you love most. Come to terms with that and maybe put some things in place or say to yourself, my kid's fucking dangerous. You know what I mean? That you have this inability to do that, that then can allow some things to happen in the most extreme cases, right? And that's not the case with my brother whatsoever. His has manifested. The reason it was hard for my mother to identify is because it manifested so much through love and peace. He was, he's into music and he's kind of being a hippie right now. And I think she worried that maybe he did a little bit of acid that's truly sticking around too much. Or
1969 schizophrenia.
Yeah, but his, to answer your question, schizoaffective order is what he was, disorder is what he was diagnosed with. That's kind of a degree of schizophrenia, I would describe it. But more than anything, it is characterized by the ability, by the psychosis, which in its definition is the ability to separate yourself from reality.
Mm-hmm.
Psychosis being nothing else than not experiencing and observing the real world through your five senses in the way that that really exists. So in a weird, like even just smelling things in a way that they don't smell, or it could be a form of psychosis. I think what we think about most with schizophrenia is seeing things that don't exist, hearing things that don't exist is certainly the grounds and the baseline of that we see most, and certainly seems to be at play with him in moments.
And just to call back quickly to, we talked about on normal person level,
mm-hmm.
how important those voices in your head are.
Yeah.
When those are actually voices in your head, mm-hmm. in a I mean.
100%.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I have, through my own journey with mental health, has been very weird and because it almost has, I have empathy for all of it, but I've almost gone the other way where I've viewed all of this through this kind of personal responsibility, like Ayn Randian sense of like your habit, like there, I have the utmost control over this, even though it's a brain thing, and my habits and da 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 are going to dictate how this mental illness kind of displays itself, or how serious it is, or how minor it is. You know what I mean? And then with a thing like schizophrenia, when you have a psychosis or experiencing the world differently, it's so much harder to view it that way, because I still think they're very tangled up and tied together. But if you're not in touch with reality, if you have fragmented thinking, if you have all of these things going on with your brain, it makes it nearly impossible to have good habits. So you can almost see the two the two kind of come together where they create this cycle that feeds on each other. You know what I mean? But seeing his illness has kind of tested that thinking in me, whether that's the correct way to look at it or not, which might be rather here nor there. But when he gets into a good swing like this, I find myself really trying to focus on the things that he can control, of like, little good habit, wake up early and do this and do that. And but it's like you're chasing your tail, because if somebody's not trying to combat it with rationality for something that is inherently in its foundation irrational, can be a very unfair thing for them and a very draining, ineffective thing for you.
Yeah.
And that's certainly what we tried to do at the beginning. And I think what everybody tries to do is just explain schizophrenia away and just talk to them rationally and well, why can't you just do that? Just do this or just do that. Well, no, they literally can't. And I think for me and my family, that was very much the first few years of the disease. And now it's very different. Like you come to understand that at some point and find different ways to deal with it or to try to be supportive to him.
And you're about a decade?
A decade to it. And I say he's in an incredible place right now. He's found God, which has been very good for him. He actually last night called me that he's part of the worship team at a very big church up here in Bangor, like a 600-member church. So he's going to be doing the music with them on stage on Sundays. And I was teary last night. Like, this boy was excited and proud, and that's
I saw the baptism video.
That's when he's been baptized recently. But that's what I mean when you like these things are real. You like when he has positive feedback in his life, the same positive feedback that's good for anybody to feel pride, to feel accomplishment, to feel fulfillment, to feel energy get expended towards a goal and then the goal achieved. When he can do these things, you see a human being growing and being built, that you can hit this again, like ride a wave that can last for a long time into the right direction. And that's what's happened recently that's been so joyful. But to go back to the word dull, which the medicine certainly makes him, but for me and my ability to be his to try to help him as best I can, there is a level of this disease that makes you, at least the way I've done it, and this isn't for everybody, but kind of dull my emotions towards him in its entirety, so that the wins are not so emotional and high that I think the disease is never going to come back again. Because guess what's prototypical to schizophrenia? They get off their medicine all of the time, no matter how clear it is that medicine is good for him. And I've seen that with him in the clearest cycle ever over this decade.
Why is that so? It seems universal.
100% universal.
Like that there's these cycles that go, but what is it that in the brain that turns and says, like, is it because of the feeling of dullness? Is it because of being told what to do? What is it that rebels against that?
I have no fucking idea. Uh-huh. I have no idea. I think that would, some of those faculties not being as strong make sense to just be able to draw the
But it usually seems like there's a negative. It's not just like, oh, I forgot to take my medicine.
No.
It's like, fuck this medicine. It's and like bad
and
for
to
me.
Be not to be dramatic, but you're trying to fucking poison me.
Yeah,
it goes to a psychosis place that is so far removed from reality. But I think the answer to that question lies a lot of the successful treatment of the disease. I don't know that it's a question I've looked for and have never seen an answer to that makes sense to me. And it is, I've been in a psych ward after suicide attempts with schizophrenics that you listen to the people talk and they know them because they've been in and out of there. You know what I mean? And they didn't see them for 2 years because they were on their medicine and they were doing great. And they're back there because they decided it was time to stop.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And I think, like, to sort of that same point, in a nutshell, why this problem, beyond the fact of like how deeply complex it is, even for the brightest minds in science, like this is still a huge problem that 100%. Isn't getting a ton better. It doesn't seem like. I had a friend that he never told me this, but he definitely had to have been by like, I knew he kind of had some sort of demons, but I think it was just a really intense bipolar thing. Cause mm-hmm. like he'd, like you say, it's the highs and the lows, but like yeah, you yeah. talk to this guy, you have a great time with them the one night, then the next day you'd see him and it would be like you had insulted his mother,
yeah,
like to his face, mm-hmm. like. It would be like you had stole, like really fucked him mm-hmm. in a really, and nothing, you hadn't seen him to, you were high fiving the previous night.
Yeah.
And it would just be like this, you like, it would be a little more, since it wasn't schizophrenia, it was, I wouldn't say rooted in reality maybe, but like, but yeah, it was like, you're still taking in the stimulus, but like he gloms on to something like, oh, he thinks he's so fucking cool because yeah, yeah. he's wearing these. Whatever Yeezys. It is. Yeah, way before that, dude. You think the hemp money? You think the hemp money was paying for the Yeezys? but yeah, it was, and that was kind of my first experience directly with like mm-hmm. a real mental disease, mm-hmm. you know, in that way. Cause, and it would leave you also obviously feeling negative about it. Mm-hmm. So then that pushes you away from this person.
And pushes everybody away from yeah. this person. And that's, I think that's the bigger point in this and realizing this is like when you talk about it's a big problem, hasn't gotten better. Frankly, I think it's gotten terribly worse. And what I think about the most in this is that how incredibly lucky he is to have me and my mom. Who have some degree of means, not a ton, but this and that, but like that we haven't been burnt out yet and are there to provide help for him and try. And then even for people like us, and the only thing I mean by like me, like I've learned along the way that like I really need to advocate for myself. So when I get into situations like dealing with the state or different, like getting the restaurant open, like I'm down to advocate, I'm down to show up at the office, I'm down to... Like, I don't know how this system works, but here I am. I'm Matt Robinson. What are we doing? How am I getting how are we getting to the place we need to get to? And even with that ability, the system it's unbelievable to what degree it is made hard and that there really is not much of a system there. And from my experience over these 10 years of some incredibly high moments like we're in right now and being so proud of him to the low moments of, it is the emergency room that is essentially the system that it needs to get so bad that there's an emergency room that you bring to, and that's the catch. And then
seems like great positive reinforcement for someone yeah. in the throes of a mental illness.
That's
you get brought to this fucking hell and you're going to get traumatic. It's down here.
But then,
yeah.
then you wonder why they don't want to take the medicine or be a part of that sort of thing. Yeah. And frankly, that is what the biggest thing that I can see that changed this current wave was that, there's been times where he's had a massive violent meltdown. I've grabbed him in a big, like physically manhandled him into my car, drove to the emergency room, brought him screaming and yelling to the gate and kind of plopped him there like, oh, mission accomplished. We got to this thing we need to get to where some set of mechanisms now get
well, kind of
triggered
help.
To do something. And the people there are like, what the, like, we're not taking, what are you doing? Like, ain't nobody coming in here this way. You know what I mean? Like, I've had that happen before. So even that part of it isn't easy, but how traumatic is that for him? Of course he doesn't want to go. What changed it this time?
And of course he's embarrassed.
Yeah.
Like the shame, like yeah. of being the problem, quote unquote.
100%.
Like, however you're filtering that in your brain at that time, it's coming in
yeah.
that I'm being, everyone's looking at me negatively yeah. right now.
And the what changed this time was that things got so bad on his own from how he was feeling and experiencing psychosis, things that weren't real, that was really scaring him, waking up in the middle of the night screaming about demonic possessions and Christ
in him.
Exorcisms and things of that nature, yeah, embodiments and things like that, that was able to have some sort of a lucid conversation of convincing him to walk in there on his own two feet. and how much better this is going to be in the past when the police bring you or when I bring you, which is the other system that's in place there, right? The police in this country are kind of becoming the mental health system. Homelessness is a schizophrenia problem and a drug problem, an opiate problem, but very much a schizophrenia problem. That's just the system that is in place when you wear down
and the difference
whatever degree of
between
support you have around you.
Zach being on this, well, maybe not him in particular, but so many people, is they don't have a you or your mom.
100%.
It's that simple.
1,000%.
It's literally that simple.
Or
like
they did,
you being the guy screaming on the street in the Old Port or whatever.
Yeah. And then what happened this time, not to dwell on all of that, these negative experiences that just show you how broken the system is. If you're trying to get them in somewhere without all of that dramatic breakdown, there's no beds available for 6 months. There's no, you know what I mean? Where you can feel these things coming on. And imagine it's similar. Like there's red flags of when my brother talks about Stephen King, or he talks about Obama, or talks about kind of these couple things in a more increasing fashion. We know there's we're starting to get away from reality. And so you kind of have these red flags of understanding that a wave is now, the other wave is coming. A wave is coming that we need to prepare for, and there's no mechanisms to get ahead of that wave. The only mechanism in place seems that disaster, danger, violence. Now you need an incident to happen for a police to step in. You need an incident to happen for the emergency room to take them. It just seems so backwards, unless there's incredible means to go to a high-end place or something like that. But even us who have some, looking around at all these places, it's not there. So what has happened this time, and to focus on the positive, is that with this trip to the emergency room this time, a ways ago, he went of his own accord. And he wanted treatment, which did see now what everything that changes when that person wants treatment. That's a very different system you're dealing with than all these closed doors, because, hey, they've got whatever sanctity of their own body, and we can't make them do things they don't want to do is the big broken part of some of that system. Went in there, went to an inpatient ward for a little bit. Came out better, and we found this place called the Clubhouse. And I get emotional when I talk about it. I think I touched on it just a hair in that Barbara Bush thing. But the setup of this place, as opposed to the setup of everything else, changes everything. When we walked in there and had found this, it seems that they have made an immense effort to get rid of the patient clinician or the prisoner guard, the dynamic of one being less than and one being in control of. The Clubhouse is set up as this place where they have a front and they have a back. In the front, they do administrative duties for these people, all under what the big mission is to help them find work, to work with the employer, to know that this person has something going on. But we're going to kind of vouch that we're on top of it and working on it. You're not going to have too many problems in your workplace. If there's government grants and funding to benefit you for taking this chance on this person, we're a conduit to help you get to that place. The entire ethos is around employment. In the back, they've got this little dining place for people at the Clubhouse and some of the general public if they want to eat at. And it's kind of just like this exercise in running a business. And then for funding, just because of where they're located, there's a concert venue that we have our beer at in Bangor, and they run their parking lot during concert nights as a parking little business, parking event, parking venue for that, and have members of the Clubhouse to kind of doing the parking stuff and learning some of these things. And they all run it together. So in the front and in the back, there's two huge whiteboards with literally the list of every task that needs to be done that day, from as minute as mopping the bathroom to as high as entering paperwork for a patient that needs to get to the state or something for a grant, and all the way down the line. And then in the back in the kitchen, same thing, ordering food, mopping, all of that stuff. And people sign up for the patients who are not treated, they're treated as partners instead of patients, sign up for as many as they want. Watching my brother thrive through this, being treated with dignity, to have agency, show up when you want, don't show up when you don't. But all of this stuff has really doubled down on that thing about how the real world stuff matters. The medicine that is good for every human being.
Yeah.
The fulfillment, the accomplishment, the patience, the discipline, all of that is good as medicine in a mental health setting. It has given us a sense of hope that me and my mom haven't felt for 5 years. And it's sent him on a path where he's on an 18-month stretch of doing as good as he ever has and performing in the worship service, has been keeping a job and doing an incredible move towards independence for him. And as it's just a level of hope that I could not be more thankful for. And what I would love to do at some is do one of the pilot beers we do, this mechanism you guys have to do incredible good and fun things is to do a You Earned It beer. And there ain't a question in my mind to where I'd want to donate that money and want to be a helpful force for, because that
stop procrastinating and get on the list, baby.
That organization has given me so much hope and I couldn't be more grateful. And
so that's amazing. And I guess just to mm-hmm. tie it up a little bit in the contrast standpoint, like, why is that not more common in broad strokes, simple terms? Because like you pointed out, there can be like benefits beyond just the people in there. It's like as employers, like, you know, certain jobs that could benefit from mm-hmm. basically the grant, basically almost having someone work for free probably is almost how it would pan out.
And I don't know how ready or available that is.
Yep.
I get the sense from talking to them in this one conversation that there's some bit of that there.
Yep.
I don't know to what degree.
So maybe an extreme.
I think that would be a great mechanism. And I think
what makes it work and why isn't working with, why don't you see it more?
Yeah, I think about this. I think it all comes down to incentive structure.
Yeah.
Right. And it's,
because as a business owner, that's what I glom onto of like, well, that's real incentive for people to take the chance because you do have to balance someone.
That's why I worry. I bet it's not there as much, because if it was, you would have your answer. We'd be seeing tons of it.
Yeah.
If there was a ton of funding dedicated to that. And I think to your point, what I see when I think about all of this is, not to make it like too big, but reading the other day about like low income housing. Now, Democrats always, they campaign on this. You would imagine that they're the party who wants all this. And then when it goes to Democrat-led cities and there's a proposal for low-income housing in a neighborhood, guess what that neighborhood comes out and does in full? Vote against it. Because people want it. They understand it from a moral perspective.
They just don't want it next to them.
They don't want it next to them. And when it comes to these mental health things and things of this nature, there is not an incentive that makes enough sense to get a ton of people to be passionate about it in the way that affects real change. And that's why I think there are people who do out of the goodness of their heart, or somebody who maybe I think about somebody like me someday. If I can accomplish everything that I want to accomplish, I've been so affected by this and I have so much drive around it because it touched me so personally that maybe I could do something that was that could actually provide some change like the clubhouse does. But without that, if you don't have the incentive of making money, and what has always been the best incentivizer of people, you know what I mean? You don't have it spread across the board. You have one person in this situation who had some means and some wealth and was touched by it and set up a really good system of how to do that. But all around the world, all around America, where these people have ended up homeless because they don't come from a lot of means, because the family they have around them socioeconomically doesn't have the ability to support them well, that they become homeless, where is the incentive to pull them out of there if they can't pay for that to happen, or if people around them can't pay for that to happen? That's why it falls as low as it can fall until it becomes a big enough of a problem that it touches something that it rallies people to put some funding there. I think it all comes down to money, just like many other things.
Yeah, I was just looking up So the stat that I saw, 1.1% of the American population has some degree of schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
A thing almost never in the news in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and this, I'm sure this number is probably about 3 or 4 or 5, even 100% higher than it was 5 years ago. 5% of the population of young Americans identify as non-binary,
mm-hmm.
which is something you hear in the news about all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm not lessening that as not feeling like you're in the right body, not feeling like there's something fucked with your identity mm-hmm. that does not translate to how people are that certainly perpetuates can lead to all these other more serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it boils down to like, it's a lot easier to talk about that.
100%.
And the solutions to it are a lot fucking easier. Just put a non-gender thing on the bathroom. Like, it's yeah. easy in the sense when you compare it to dealing with a vicious mental disease, and it's just layers on layers and layers of very hard to navigate problems.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like that was an interesting contrast to see of yeah. like.
And I agree. I think it's the deepest. It's obviously I'm biased because it touched me and is close to me, but in a very real way, I think it is one of the deepest, hardest questions to answer as a society.
Now that we can't just say you're a witch.
That shows, well, you know what I mean?
And this literally,
is,
yeah.
Again, like it's been bad. It's just like everything else. It's easy to sit here and cry about it from my standpoint. It's not lost on me that.
You're not crying about
no,
it.
No, but I mean, progress is progress from.
Yeah.
They're not called. It's not a witch. Like the way the places we did go and where we've gone.
Easier solution, though, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It makes sense that that was part of the evolution.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
But, and
advocating.
There's one. I don't mean to. I find this incredibly fascinating to think about. And it doesn't lead me anywhere. But the thing you said about the witch reminded me of it. When I was looking, when I saw this hint of awareness in my brother, and it almost hurt more, to be honest. Like, I've seen my brother in the worst state ever, but he's so far away from reality that it's almost easy to, can't believe I'm saying these words out loud, but to like dehumanize. He's so far away from the way that I operate or from understanding real stimulus that maybe he doesn't, although this is vicious and tearing my heart out, seeing this level of agony and screaming in his voice with doctors holding him down and to see them confine him and do that is breaking your heart. In the back of my mind, I'm always was able to pull on this thing of like, maybe he doesn't even realize, you know, like maybe it's so crazy that you can almost, it doesn't hurt as much. And then this time.
That's natural human thing though, to be like, I don't have the fucking solution for this at all.
It comes to the human thing though. I'm going to follow that thread for 1 second.
Yeah,
because it's a scary thing to say about, but I started thinking about, I saw it through my relationship with Aisha and how she would treat him at times. And I don't mean that in a bad way. She's been an incredible advocate for him, but his violence was pointed at her once and it's very big and complicated. But this girl who was so empathetic and who I love, her ability, it seemed like to almost dehumanize him a little bit, made me look at my own. I'm his brother. He's half me. How could I dehumanize him? He's made out of the same stuff that I'm made of. And then once he got into this wave where he was like, the thing that led to him going to the hospital on his own was this little glimmer of clarity in all of the madness that made it hurt so much. Do you get what I'm like?
Mm-hmm.
I know he can feel it and that hurts worse, but that's what led to him being willing to go to the hospital on his own. That's what set this good ball in motion. And that's what gave me unable to dehumanize him.
Yeah.
That gave me the wanting to be his superhero.
Renewed.
I'm going to find a fucking answer this time. Period. And I couldn't for a while. And that's why I get so excited about the clubhouse. Because I couldn't. And this weird thing happened where all the answers seem to be there for a different type of illness. And I'm so sorry to use this word, but almost a certain type of retardation and or a certain type of special needs that you would use then. And I started realizing with all of these types, like if my brother had Down syndrome, I've got 10 avenues open right now to everybody I call. Or even if my brother had some of those learning disabilities where they're shaking in a chair and it's
like
and
high degree autism,
it's
or
visible.
Yeah.
You can see it.
Yeah.
And it looks different than you. It's visible to the outside. And it's there. And frankly, I don't mean this in any bad way. I've got a friend who I'm not that close with, but his daughter has Down syndrome, and watching him from afar has been incredibly joyful, incredible advocate for her, and literally an example of how to take that and make the best and make change. But there's almost a cuteness to Down syndrome,
which
I think really is at play in some of this. The thing about schizophrenia that I just like through Asia and seeing that, and even through me, is it looks like you until it gets to the when it does get to the point where it's all the way at the end and it's on the street and it's dirty and it's ugly and it's then you just
it's easier to look away. It's
you
just
look
easier
to look away.
Yeah.
But when it's at the beginning and it looks like you and it's you can't identify it until bad like crazy things snap out at you and happen, it's fucking jarring.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And that there is something tied up there with the fact that you can't see it. And the fact that makes it easy to make it more deplorable, I think, and to make that behavior deplorable without the empathy. And I think that plagues it in a very serious way. And that, again, when you, that's a very hard thing to even like think about or overcome. You know what I mean? Like, how are humans able to do that in their mind to that? And I obviously, like I said, don't have the answer to any of that, but I think it's something important to think about if you are in a place where for whatever reason you want to think about schizophrenia or have to because it's around you. I think that's a very that they're human beings and with dignity and agency and all of those things, there is a solution here in time. Pretending it doesn't exist, looking away from it, is obviously not that solution. You know what I mean? And some of there's things wrapped up in that can give us, as humans, some incredible gifts. They tend to be art related at times. My brother sat down at a piano when he was 8 and just boop, bing, boom. Oh, that's how this works. Just could play. You know what I mean? But he's able to bring joy to people at the church starting now with his music and stuff like that. There's so much good that these people, tough words, but these people have to offer. And I'm developing the idea that
this group, I mean, it's not,
I don't know. That's why I joked about saying, I didn't mean it in that way, but a lot of it is what you do as a society to that. To give those traumatic experiences and give that the bullying in school that leads to the shoot. It's a lot of it is how we treat it as a society that I think makes it turn to a darker, more violent, bad place. Because the experiences we have as humans and all of that does matter so much. That's my ending part.
And I mean, I've seen it from you just as a little touchstone. You say there's great gifts. I mean, it's given you a great gift though, even though it's been through these really immense mental trials of of trying to be the support that you want to be for him as your brother. But seeing the happiness that you get and the fulfillment when you see progress through his happiness is I feel like a gift many people will never experience, being able to help someone through that to some degree. I mean, it's palpable when I talk to you about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's special.
I'm going to spin on you. I agree with you. And I know I just teared up and I know I get an immense amount of pride sometimes when I talk about this. What seems counterintuitive though, and what I think the gift that it has given me, it has dulled me in the best way possible. It hasn't made me cold. It hasn't made me unemotional. But it is
safe to say.
It has made me understand on this road that I believe is my road in this dulling period, because I had my own mental illness. And if I was not dull and balanced and able, I would not be able to be any support for him. So when it is at its worst, as scary as that might be, and as horrifying as the possible outcomes could be, it can't break me. And there needs to be a turn off at some point about how supportive I can be to him and how much it can hurt me. And then when it is at its absolute best, I can be proud of him and I can be happy for him. But that is his win. It's not mine. I can't be so happy that it makes me forget where this can go and pulls me out of the degree of balance that I need to have if I'm going to fight this battle with him for the next 50 years and not just fighting it for a couple. So it is, again, put back on this thing to me about deleting each of the poles and staying more in the middle, which I kind of feel is my ongoing journey of my entire life, is that I'm going to be the best person I can be if I can stay in that 50%.
And some, leave the North Pole to Santa.
Exactly. And sometimes that comes with cold feelings of, or it's come with family fights of telling my mother that as long as this and is happening right here, none of my energy is going to be helpful to the current situation as it stands. So it's not getting it. And that sounds cold, and that sounds, but when there is any window of being able to actually be helpful, or something is going on that can be helped, I have all the energy to be there because I've made those other decisions that are hard to not to be when it's completely fruitless. And the same thing happens on the positive side. So it has dulled me in the best way possible, I feel. And I know that sounds weird to say.
I think you could easily just say it like, it's made me less emotional in the most important ways possible, because emotion is not understanding. Emotion, like, it understand being emotional, feeling emotion, it's immensely important to understand the nature of being a human being.
Yes.
But when it comes to actually making a decision,
don't do it then.
It really just has no place in any decision.
1,000%.
And it's something I've, in different ways, you fight all the time. Everyone, I think, does. Mm-hmm. But if you really boil it down, that, get out of here. Like, mm-hmm. you're not here for this.
Yes.
You're here to help me make the thing, to help me feel the way I feel, that brings me to the place where I need to make the decision.
Yes.
But it is not driving the decision. It got me to the person I am that has the context and awareness to make the best decision.
Yes.
And I feel like that gets conflated so often.
There's an incredibly fine line between not feeling them and running away from them. That's what drugs was for me. I'm a very, very emotional person, and I could not function to the degrees of highs and lows that I was having on a daily basis. I'd lost my father. I didn't have a lot of tools. I didn't have a lot of understanding. Opiates are pretty good. Opiates will dull.
Pretty sharp tool.
That'll dull you real fast. And that's what I did to do that. That's not dealing with them at all. That's entirely different than experience them in the utmost, fight against them at all costs. And even when you're experiencing, know what it is, know why, know that, okay, I can't be making any big decisions in this frame or window. I need to do everything I can to learn how to make this subside back to like homeostasis or whatever you want to call it, but some reasonable
capitulations
thing.
Something like that.
but I really feel strongly in that. Even the joys, understand it, like it, give yourself credit for it, and get the fuck out of there.
Because no, it ain't permanent.
And get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
And I really, same on both sides. It's something I've been thinking about a ton lately is if I want anything for myself above everything else, it's like emotional intelligence and emotion regulation. And I think with that comes the path to discipline. Because emotions can pull you out of discipline real fast.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying?
The
enemy of discipline.
Exactly.
Maybe that'll be Ryan Holiday's new book. Emotion is the enemy.
Turns out ego, not that bad. I had it wrong. Pretty good, actually. We'll leave that rabbit hole. I think ego and emotion are wildly tied to each other. It's why the reason
is why you get emotional. Yes.
To protect the, it's all about protecting that ego.
Yep.
That's a podcast for another day.
Yep. That's when we get Ryan Holiday on here, and I'm like not having a great time.
But and I feel weird sometimes. Zach listens some and may listen to this, and I just the where he is now is what made me comfortable to share this, and I'm so incredibly proud of him.
The only thing I hear is a brother that's incredibly proud and loves his brother an immense amount, and is trying to do everything he can to give. Like any brother would want to do, to give the best life for him.
And he's doing so much of it himself right now, and I'm so proud.
Love you, Zach.
Love
Shout
you,
out,
Zach.
Man. Amazing stuff, man. Amazing stuff. Do something about it. If you're feeling something, do something
get
about
a W.
it. If nothing else, yeah, get a W.
Get a fucking W.
And
doesn't matter how
it
small.
It's not going to get easier if you start to feel whatever degree of whatever. If this is starting to be a pattern, the pattern's not going to break itself. Mm-hmm. It just won't. You feel these, okay, it seems like I'm crying like about once a month. Like I have 3 days where I am horrible, you know? And it's like, I guess this isn't going to stop actually. So just do something about it. You're wasting time if not, like the more time you're wasting. And medicine isn't the answer for everyone either. It was the answer for me, but that's, I'm not being like, everyone get on pills.
Fuck no.
That's not at all what I'm saying, but yeah, great stuff, man. Let's end real light, real quick.
Yeah.
Three bay.
Sure.
Let's go. I'm going to give you three noble gases.
Okay. I'm going to give you three wretched mental illnesses. Yeah.
Well,
I'm kidding.
The second part is any sort of mental, I don't know if the term would be like mental deficiency, mental vice, the things like anxiety, depression, those sort of thing, procrastination, that sort of stuff, tie it to a gas. So I'm going to give you helium. I'm going to give you, I don't know if neon's noble, but I'm going to give you neon. And then I'm going to give you, argon, because we mentioned it, and it's used in welding sometimes.
Heard. Three noble gases with three...
They might not be noble. I'll drop the noble.
Sure, three gases. say the second part one more time.
Like, pair it with just shit people try to get over in their head.
Things going on in the head.
Yeah, negatives.
Mental illnesses.
Like, whether it's small things like I'm selfishness, like literally anything in that vein, whether it's clinical or just a thing that isn't good to have.
Mm-hmm.
Mike.
All right, we'll start with the easy one. Helium.
I try to give you sort of onomatopoeias of gas, you know.
Helium will do like the mania that is an onset during bipolar disorder. It's high. It's real. The norepinephrine's flowing, noradrenaline's flowing. You're up. You're high. You ain't coming down anytime soon.
But you will, and it's going to be bad.
Yeah. And yeah, when you do, you don't go back to the mean. You go down low, low, low.
Yeah. So that balloon deflates.
The balloon deflates, and that voice comes crashing back to normal. So mania is helium. Neon. Neon is the psychosis, the rage, the aggression and the rage that can come with mental illness, whether that be certainly present in schizophrenia, like borderline personality disorder, bipolar disorder, the outburst. That's the stuff that becomes visible to everybody else. Depression, you can kind of keep under wraps for a while and fight on your own, and it might not be as visible to people. Those outbursts are when it can't be kept anymore is visible, and we'll go neon for that reason. Very bright, very visible. Argon. argon.
Bit of a black box in the gas world, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's okay. We'll go to that part. No, that's not fair because I have done it. What's the thing? Delusions of grandeur. Is it? No, we will go. We'll go call argon delusions of
Three
grandeur.
Three bay baby.
Because I certainly think I had degrees of bipolar disorder, mostly during the music phase. So maybe drug use was incorporated in that. But over the last 10 years, we've very much, or last 8 years, very much talked more about like imposter syndrome and some of those things. That's been kind of more the present part of my plight. Very tough. It's been hard for me. I've gone through so much. But truly, like it's all been rooted in lack of confidence.
Yeah.
But then discovering that there's tensions there that are useful when understood and used the right way. There's tension to some of these feelings that can bring the best out of you if you explore them and understand them. Delusions of grandeur are not something that I have had in a very long time. Not something I'm familiar with anymore. Not something I have felt. Something I did at one time. But that's, I know very little about it, and I know very little about argon. I know nothing about it, so that's where I'm at.
I heard, I was on a podcast, I can't remember who they were talking to, but it was some comedian, and this guy said he was kind of describing how he like operates on the road, and it was, you know, pretty intense.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, dude, you have weaponized anxiety. I was like, I like that. Like, but it's to what you're pointing to.
In a good way.
Yes. It's like directing these things that are a part of you.
Yeah.
In a positive, just kind of nudging them one. A few degrees of redirection can be all the difference sometimes
100%.
Between, you know, whatever. Yeah, whatever examples.
And just a last bit, I know I've done a lot of talking today and we've done a lot.
No,
but
man.
I had the other, it's as stupid as it is, it's a Drake line. Like anxiety is a drug that I use to get the job done. And then kind of had like little aha moment of like, that's where that is helpful to me. That feeling of I'm not doing enough, the feeling of I'm not good enough, or da da, drives all of this good. All of this.
To try to get you there.
This raw energy output work. But then the ego part is that wrapped up in all of that anxiety and that work is a wealth of inefficiency. You know what I mean? And if you can take the anxiety but fight against it and keep that level of need to work and want to work, but squash the anxiety part of it and then embark on all of the efficiency part instead of using the work to overcome how inefficient you are and hedge against it, to put the two together would be a pretty incredible place to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to try to do over the next couple of years.
Weaponize that anxiety, man.
Weaponize it.
Put that nuclear core in that shit.
That's what we're going to try. See what happens.
Let's see what happens, and we'll see who we're talking to next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Yep. Bye. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens.